Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, Christopher Durang's latest play, is a glorious mishmash of Chekhovian themes and characters with a few People Magazine-type twists thrown in. The play may be set in Bucks County, but it's mismatched lovers, stymied middle-aged siblings, and nothing ever goes quite right plot or straight from the dachas of Tsarist Russia. Joining me today to talk about the play, which is currently being performed at the Mitzi E. Newhouse Theater in Lincoln Center, are David Hyde Pierce, who plays Vanya, Christine Nielsen, who is Sonia, and Sigourney Weaver, who plays their glamorous globe-trotting film star sister, Masha. Welcome to our show.
Thank you,
Leonard.
Thank
what a great description of the
yes,
show. That was really good.
You're hired.
Well, I had the advantage of actually seeing it. How would you describe the play? Would you say it's a farce or a homage in a way? Or do we say homage? I'm never sure.
Fromage.
Well, that's a cheesy approach.
You know, the interesting thing about farce to me is that farce involves wanting things so badly you will do anything for it. And so to me, that Durang does have that those depths, just as Chekhov does, but it's expressed in a much funnier way. There are farcical elements, certainly, because we're kind of driven to extremes, at least I think Masha is.
I think farce is deadly serious.
Yes.
Well, which you'd have to approach it. Yeah.
People have said that the way to play Chekhov is as comedy, because that just makes the more serious aspects more powerful. And to some degree, that could be said about this as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. I also think what's great about this play is I think it's almost impossible to label it. I think people have tried, but it's a great sort of feat of Chris's that it has farcical elements. It's Chekhovian. It has some, I think, real depth. And also, as you mentioned, that funny phrase about People Magazine types, it also skirts the edges of the most popular entertainment.
Well, it deals with some serious themes, the disappointments of middle age, the cruelty of the flesh, the threat of global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Christopher Durang was thinking about those things when he was writing this play. But for how much does the audience need to know about Chekhov to enjoy the play, do you think?
I think just what they think they know about Chekhov. Do you know? A lot of people make assumptions about Chekhov, and I think that's all you have to come in with. Oh, my God, it's going to be a dreary Russian evening. And David and I try to fulfill that in the first scene.
I'm not going to reveal what you do because there's an opening surprise. But for those of us who do know a little Chekhov, it is a bit like a treasure hunt. Little nuggets keep on coming up. And Christopher Durang even throws in an occasional quote.
Yes.
Which gets a laugh in many cases. But even if you don't know Chekhov, how can you not love Christine wandering around moaning, "I'm a wild turkey"?
And I'm not even drinking. No. But it is I've always felt with Chekhov, especially in this country, we may have assumptions about it. You know, I think if we were Russian, we would have another set of assumptions. And having actually seen a couple of Russian productions, you know, they were quite funny and quite farcical. I think they take it with a grain of salt as well. But how we've assumed it and seen it has been kind of just sad melancholy with a soft light, maybe some shadow.
Well, do you think the wild turkey is the stand-in for the seagull, or is it the blue heron that people are constantly looking for?
Well, yeah, I think the wild turkey is literally the stand-in, because of course Nina in The Seagull famously says, "I'm a seagull, I'm an actress, I'm a seagull," and Christine we know is an actress, so all she has to say is, "I'm a wild turkey." What's the blue heron?
Well, I think there's, when we discussed Chekhov in rehearsal, I mean, it was very clear that unlike Chekhov, I think Chris Durang at this point in his life is more hopeful about things being resolved and people coming together and bad patterns being ended and things like that. And so I feel like the blue heron is a kind of, it's just a vision of an auspicious future for the universe and for these siblings. And I think the play is deeply satisfying to the audiences because it goes so many different places, often hilariously.
Into a lot of physical comedy as well.
A lot of physical comedy. And at the same time, by the end of the play, when the siblings are able to sort of come together and wait for the blue heron, I feel like the audience is right there with us, hoping the blue heron will arrive and feeling like it's just a question of time.
Well, not everyone. The Wall Street Journal brought the Russian literary critic Irina Prokhorova,
really?
Do you know that, to see it. And she thought it was very Chekhovian ending.
Oh.
She said, it's three old people sitting and waiting for blue heron that will never come.
I, you know, I was going to mention that interview because it's so Russian. She
that
said,
so
oh, this happy ending. She said, they are only happy because they have abandoned their dreams, which is quintessentially Russian.
Yes.
It's such a great, yeah.
Yes. Pass the vodka.
All depends on your perspective.
Yeah. Have any of you appeared in something by Chekhov?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't. Oh, you have. I saw him.
You began. Actually, you were in Chekhov before you were in Fraser.
I was on
you?
Television, yes. I did The Seagull out at the Guthrie Theater, and then I did a great production of The Cherry Orchard that Peter Brook directed.
And you were also in Durang before then.
And, well, we all have a lot of history with Chris. My first professional play was Beyond Therapy back in 1982 with Chris's Broadway show.
But whether you've been in Chekhov or not, am I right in assuming all actors love Chekhov?
I think so. I only was able to do a benefit of some scenes from Three Sisters with Vanessa and Lynn Redgrave.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty great, yeah.
But I've always wanted to do it, and I feel I am doing it, playing Masha. I feel all of our contemporary characters in a lot of literature are very Chekhovian. I think he's had an extraordinary influence on our literature and our playwriting. Because I think the things he brings up, the angst and the inability to resolve things and the longing, they're all incredibly contemporary. And so I sort of feel like I wish I had done him, and maybe it's not too late, but I feel it's certainly in an actor's blood. Chekhov.
Well, I do, and I think it's the highs and the lows, the oppositions, you know, that you can, doing a farce with your heartbreak, you know, they laugh harder the more you cry, which is so bizarre for an actor. You know, you're in an emotional state, you're sobbing, and the audience just laughing.
Now, you've all, as we pointed out, have been in Durang plays in the past. In fact, Christine and Sigourney, you've been in a fair number. You've only been in one, David?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, it's not a competition. No.
But Sigourney, you were in Beyond Therapy, and you've said that when you started, no one in the cast was in therapy, and by the end, everyone was.
Yes, it's absolutely true.
And why is that? Because these plays are so madcap? I mean, in this one, Durang takes things to such an absurd level, and you're starting off as real people, and then you got to somehow still make these hilarious things continue to seem real.
I guess it all makes sense if you think that, you know, I guess from Masha's point of view, I'm the sister who's the globe-trotting one. I want them to think I'm as wonderful as they might think I am. And it's really life or death for me. And they have to tear my imagined happiness from my hands during the play. And the more I can have it in the beginning, even though it's fake, the better it is. And I feel like that's so real. I guess it's funny, but to me it seems so...
Well, you end up being dressed as Disney's Snow White.
Yes, which is a high point in my career. I never realized that we had to meet somehow.
Christine, you were going to say...
No, I was just going to say, I think why we go to such extremes is that Chris has captured so wonderfully the sibling. You know, because you can be as... I'm going to say middle-aged, I'm not going to say old, but as we're older, we still fall right back into the patterns where we sound like we're 7th, 8th, 10 years old, screaming at each other about costumes. You know, mm-hmm. It becomes, he's captured that so well. That's why I think, you think we go to high extremes, but I think we're just playing true to form.
But is part of the art not allowing these characters to become caricatures?
Yes, I think Chris's plays, Chris's language, present a very specific challenge, which is they work in a very heightened way, and at the same time they work best when it's very real. And I think for all of us in the rehearsal process and continuing the performance is finding that, holding on to that balance. Because the stuff that we're dealing with are kind of like in Chekhov, it's just real life. It's as absurd as the things are. People, it's the siblings, it's loss, it's losing parents, it's change in the world, all that stuff that we all deal with.
It looks like you're having a really good time.
No.
Everybody but David is having a really good time.
It's a miserable nightmare.
I think it's such a testament to a good play that, you know, we started this play at the McCarter in Princeton. We had 2 months there where, you know, we got to run around and do apple picking and other things in the country and kind of become little siblings. And then to come into New York with it, you really get to take the measure of the material if you've been in a play for so many months, as we will have been, like 6 months. The play just gets deeper all the time and more moving to me to be in it, to see these wonderful actors playing the siblings. And, you know, we have such an incredible ensemble. And the play just grows and grows and grows. And I feel like the audience is always coming up to us after and saying, this is the best play I've seen all year. And so it's really a good meal for them, I feel.
Yeah. Well, we should mention the other actors in the play.
Oh, all right.
Billy Magnuson seems to have come straight out of Sweet Bird of Youth.
Yes. You may do that someday.
We've talked about it.
With him.
Yeah.
Except that he just has an incredible sense of physical comedy.
Yes. He works everything out. He's very fastidious. It's not just, you know, shooting from the hip. He does that too, but he's very professional about it.
He gets to be the anarchist. I'm very jealous of that, but it's quite fun that he upsets all of us in different ways.
And then there's Shalita Grant, who plays Cassandra, obviously from a different area of literature.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of a Greek tragic prophetess in our own time.
And she gets a lot of laughs from mixing up her prophecies with reminding herself what household chores she has to do because she's the maid.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and those are some of the most inspired speeches by Chris. This just really absurdist mishmashes of Greek plays and strange contemporary references and thinly disguised, hidden agendas of Shalita's, of Cassandra's. It's really great. And she sells them out of the park.
Well, he gives each of you the equivalent of a monologue.
Yes. Well, yes. And of course, Nina, played by Genevieve Angelson, who she gets mm-hmm. the sort of Durang version of Nina's reading of Constantine's play in The Seagull, which, again, has its own sort of twisted view of things. But she does that so beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's almost like the straight, sane person in the midst of all this insanity.
Yes.
But delivering these monologues, some of them so filled with wild changes, how much of a challenge does that present to you as an actor? I mean, yours, Christine, for example.
It's a gift for an actor.
You go back and forth with accents as well.
Yes, I do. Well, I'm blessed with... goodness for Downton Abbey, I say every time. So. But I think it's kind of a wonderful human quality that Chris has captured again, and a gift with the hairpin turns that you get to do. I think that's what is a challenge, but it's also what makes it very exciting, I think. It's to surprise the audience all the time and to surprise yourself with which way you go. You know, we're still finding those things, which is great. After the amount of time we've already spent, we're still changing things. Your mm-hmm. wonderful monologue at the end. I don't even want to call them monologues because they're
the
so
the audience actually infused. Applauds after these monologues. Well, I don't know what other word to use, but you're given a fair amount of time to say your piece. The audience actually applauds as though they recognize that there was real artistry in what you've done on top of often agreeing with what was said.
Yeah, I think a lot of times the reaction is what you just said. It's a combination of, yes, the actor did a good job or a beautiful job in the case of Christine on our phone call, but also applauding the place that Chris brought us in that particular speech, a place that we didn't maybe expect to go in this play that we were coming to see.
I think David's rant, which is right out of Chris, really, against email and Twitter and all these things that preoccupy people and separate us from each other, is something that is sort of like a wonderful dessert at the end of the play. Just when they think they know what the play is about, suddenly comes this amazing, you know, kind of tirade, sexy, fantastic, beautifully done by David, but all about our contemporary culture and what we've lost and what we miss about things that bring us together. And, you know, I think it's so unexpected. It's so wonderfully performed, but it's also something that people kind of refer to, but they don't really get a chance to express it. And the audience really comes alive. I can see them, you know, they're just like, yeah, you know, it's really takes the cork out of the bottle.
Well, it's kind of like what every parent wants to say to their kids. And
I had Joanna Lumley, the great British actress, had come to visit, and she came to see the show. And afterwards, she said, after two cocktails, that speech is what comes out of my mouth.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. My guests are David Hyde Pierce, Christine Nielsen, and Sigourney Weaver, who play three of the four title roles in Christopher Durang's latest very funny play called Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, currently at the Mitzi E. Newhouse Theater in Lincoln Center. And since all of you have worked with Christopher Durang early in your careers, is that true? When did you meet him, Sigourney?
Well, I met Chris, I think, the first week I was at the Yale Drama School. We were staying in the Hall of Graduate Studies, and we had all our meals together with another wonderful playwright named Albert Inarrotto, and they were both so funny. I can't remember eating anything that year. I was always laughing so hard. And we were all, you know, so young and so excited to be at drama school. And really early on, I started working in the Yale Cabaret doing Chris's stuff. And it really, I wasn't encouraged a lot at Yale by some of the teachers, but Chris and some of the other playwrights, Wendy Wasserstein and Albert Inarrotto, the new stuff, you know, was so exciting to do and really gave me wings and really made me understand that it was the most wonderful profession, and I couldn't wait to come to New York and be in these, you know, condemned buildings doing these wonderful plays for a few days. And so I think I've done maybe six or seven of Chris's plays. I feel very grateful because I think he's such an astonishing writer.
And Wendy wasn't encouraged either at the time.
No, Wendy was the least encouraged of every. That's a whole other hour on your show.
But do you feel because of that relationship, and I ask the other two as well, that has led to a certain kind of a loyalty to Christopher Durang? Because, Sigourney, you know, you became rather famous for other things that are referred to in this
Not
play,
a slasher movie. Not, I haven't done that.
Yeah, but he kind of.
We have fun.
Oh,
with
the
it.
Career is young. Yeah.
Suggests right. that he seems to be referring to some degree to the Alien movies that you made.
Yes. Well, it's based on these characters we wrote for an Esquire piece where I play an awful version of myself trying to get attention in the Russian tea room. So he sort of took that as a sort of germ, and yes, but it is fun to kind of. I think for the audience, there's a moment of like, is she really going to go to there? And then I do, and they go, oh, all right. You know.
But have you felt a sense of loyalty?
Like, oh, I
because you've
certainly
been in so
do.
Many
I
of
think
his
if,
plays.
If not for Chris, I probably would have not pursued a career in acting.
Oh, really?
I did one of his plays after another the first couple of years in New York, and it was wonderful. I never got paid, but it didn't seem to matter, and I just adore his work, and I was thrilled at also the opportunity to work with Christine, who I've known for a long time, and the chance to work with David, who I have a big crush on. So it's been a dream come true, and I hope he will continue writing for these old actors that he's known so long.
Well, I was going to say people of a certain age, but Christine, how many of the Durang plays have you been in?
I think I've been in about five, and I met Chris doing a disaster together. You know, it's like we bonded on the Titanic in some horrible way, you know. And I think that's how you do it. It was actually, this is my first time back at Lincoln Center. Chris and I were in Ubu, which is something that you have to find the posters.
Based on Ubu Froid?
Yes, it was. Yes.
And Alfred Jarry.
Yes. And it was, you know, I actually love that play, but our production was not very good. And Chris and I, he was the conscience and I was the queen, not Mare Ubu, but the queen. And we just would sit in the green room and just philosophize and just sit there and talk and moan and complain and do all the things actors do in a green room. And we discovered so much that we have a same sensibility about how to see the world, where we preferred laughing to crying. Being in a bomb, you could cry or you could laugh, and we thought it would be fun.
And David, you were in Beyond Therapy. Mm-hmm. That's before you were cast as Niles Crane. You're apparently typecast as someone who should be involved in some kind of therapy.
Yes. I have been since birth. We had a similarly sort of tragicomic experience. Beyond Therapy, it was my first job in New York. And what I specifically remember among the many things was that it was a Broadway show and the audiences were laughing their heads off until opening night when the New York Times Review came out. And the New York Times Review didn't like the play. And the next night we had the performance where no one laughed. And it was my first experience of the power and meaninglessness of that event at the same time, because play hadn't changed. Mm-hmm. So it's just...
Well, actors often talk about not reading their reviews, but you kind of knew what had gone on just by the fact that the audience had been told this is not a funny play, so you shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, I mean, and that effect wears off eventually, but it's a little shocking the first time you go through it.
It's interesting because we've been blessed with wonderful reviews for the play, and the audience loves to come and know it's all right to laugh from the very first time Christine opens her mouth, practically, you know, and it's just such a great ride for them, and to be told, yes, this is good, and you can really sit back and enjoy it instead of, no, you can't trust yourself, don't think it's funny, because I didn't think so, you know.
But, David, in your case, you get laughs, you've gotten laughs even where people didn't expect them. Didn't you say that you got all the laughs from your role as Laertes when you played opposite Kevin Kline
yes,
in Hamlet?
Yes, I did. I got all the laughs, and there really shouldn't be any.
that was
early
one of
warning
Shakespeare's
sign
comedies.
Of impending comedy, yeah.
I'm surprised Kevin let you live.
He's still looking for him.
No. We had a good time. But I probably had too good a time.
But each night, I suspect, the audience is different. They laugh at different things. Although in this case, you kind of know where the laugh lines are going to fall, don't you?
We learned. Yeah. We learned how to do. I mean, that's why we had this wonderful 2 months in Princeton, where it's a great thing. It's not really doesn't really happen anymore that a new play gets to sort of try out its, you know, go from crawling to walking to running outside of town. And we were very lucky that the McCarter had commissioned this play from Chris Turang. Emily Mann had commissioned it several years ago, and so we got to really be in beautiful Princeton, but also have wonderful audiences who really loved the play and who knew Bucks County and all these wonderful kismet-like things to support us coming into New York. I think it was, by the time we came here, we knew what a good play we had.
Mm-hmm. There was another Russian play, based on the Brothers Karamazov with Meryl Streep, and as Constance Garnett, the translator?
Yes, it's wonderful. She was brilliant.
So all of you people knew each other when you were still students?
Well, Meryl and I were at Yale at the same time. These guys are slightly younger, so they knew. Actually, Christine was at school with my husband, Jim Simpson, who runs the Flea Theater.
Yes, yeah. That's how we first met, yeah.
Sigourney Weaver will be in the Green Space on Monday night at 7 p.m. as part of a look at American Song, a new dramatic audio series being produced by The Flea. For tickets, you can go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Is this a limited run?
Yes. Right now, we're set to go through January 13th. We're hoping that if we can work out everyone's schedules, we might extend for a few weeks. But right now, January 13th is our final show.
The problem with Lincoln Center and some of the other wonderful places that take chances is that they often have another play coming in. But my great thanks to the three of you, David Hyde Pierce, Christine Nielsen, and Sigourney Weaver, for stopping by to talk with us about Christopher Durang's latest play, Vanya, Sonia, Masha, and Spike. On tomorrow's show, we'll look at the complicated history of Afghanistan, and then the director and two of the stars of The Piano Lesson, the fourth play in August Wilson's epic century cycle. Also, A.M. Holmes on her new dark comic novel about 21st century suburban life, May We Be Forgiven, and Please Explain is all about mold, from the kind that makes delicious cheeses to the gross stuff in your shower. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake D. Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Moe Sagan's the executive producer. We had help today from Keith Karn, Galen Druk, and contributing producer Fran Jacobs. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.